When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
I know you're paying attention to global events as well as what's going on in our nation. War and increased conflict is bubbling up in more places. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals. Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD, 833-995-G-O-L-D.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show, Wednesday edition of the program. We have a ton to discuss with you. Big primary night in Georgia, Alabama, Texas, and beyond Arkansas as well. We will discuss what those impacts were. We got a bunch of great guests for you all headed this direction. We will discuss all of that, but we begin with the story that everybody is talking about, a shaken country in many ways, as a mentally ill 18-year-old took the life of 19 kids, two adults, also shot his grandmother, and everyone is reacting to what happened in Uvalde, Texas, and we certainly want to extend, as a parent, I walked my kids to elementary school this morning. My kids get out of school today, so I'm ducking out to go pick them up as they have a half day for the summer here in the Nashville area. And so I walk my kids to school pretty much every morning. Most days, many days, I am picking them up in the afternoon as well. So like all of the parents and grandparents out there who have young children, this is a sickening story. I am filled, Buck, with questions about this on so many different levels. And my first reaction to all of these stories is after Columbine and after Sandy Hook, many different schools have put in policies that make it hard to get into a school if someone is armed and is trying to do so. And I'll give you an example. At my kids' elementary school, there is an armed police officer there. And by the way, I personally believe that there should be an armed police officer at virtually every school in America. That is my personal opinion. Some of you may disagree. I also, in order to get into our building, our elementary school, Buck, you have to show your driver's license. And you have to be buzzed in through locked doors. And then there is, once you are through there, another door where you have to be buzzed in. And then you also have to be buzzed in from the office. Everybody has to come in through the main entrance of the building. If you don't have they can look at you. There's a camera when you say that who you are and why you're coming in. If you don't have your ID, they won't let you in. They know me. I've had three kids that go to this school before. I've forgotten my ID and had to turn around and drive back to go get my ID to be able to be let into the building. My point on all this, and I hear almost no one discussing it, is I want to know how this guy ended up inside of this school. What protocols were in place that would have kept that from happening? Did they break down? How did he make his way into the building to be able to commit these murders? Also, Buck, I want to know, was there armed security? We know, at least based on the AP report, that there was a border security guard who basically went in, and we don't know his name yet, and killed this man and may have saved many lives. But was there other security there? I want to know all the facts before I start demanding action, and we still know a small fraction, it seems to me, of the overall facts.
And you mentioned that, and I think it's important, especially in the aftermath of these situations when the whole country is reeling with grief, to point out that there was a hero on the scene here, and it was a member of Border Patrol. And Border Patrol is law enforcement. Border Patrol has a lot. I think about 30% of Border Patrol are former veterans of the United States military. You know, a very honorable service that is critical to this country's interests and has a lot of good men and women who are serving every day. And in this case, a hero who stepped up. I'd be willing to bet he probably just had a sidearm and went up against somebody who had a long gun and who was obviously in the midst of a murderous rampage and also had body armor on. And he was taken down. So there was a hero who reacted. I mean, in the aftermath of this tragedy, obviously, the whole country's heartbroken right now. And it's one of these moments where you would like to believe, Clay. And, you know, I spoke to Tucker on his show last night about this issue right before Biden's speech, which we'll go into in a moment. I think we'd all like to believe as Americans that can we just start from the premise that we all think this is absolutely horrifying, and we all would want to do whatever is reasonable and possible to stop this or to limit this possibility in the future. And we come from that perspective. The problem that we have right now, as I see it, talking about the aftermath, and we can speak more about the details of this. I spent a lot of time when I did counterterrorism analysis looking at, and there were whole parts of that that discipline. I mean, in New York City, it's actually the intelligence division that does essentially counter plot work, meaning going after terrorist cells. And then there's CTD, counterterrorism division. All they do, Clay, is hardening soft targets, government, in this case, government targets, but all kinds of government buildings. And look at what you're discussing, ingress and egress points, choke points for where people would have to filter in, things like that. Right. So there are things you can do along those lines. There's obviously the armed security component of this. And as a country, having that discussion is absolutely called for and worthwhile. I just think that what's deeply disturbing as a political and as an aftermath component of this, because we all are horrified by what happened, is that it really does seem to me that the Democrat impulse, and I don't mean from random strangers online, I'm talking about the governor of California, I'm talking about members of Congress, is to turn around and say, Republicans need to do what I want them to do because of ideology, or else they don't care about a lot of murdered children. This is what's being said, and I'm not exaggerating what they say. I'm not taking out of context what they say. And my position on this is that it goes beyond that. The screaming at the right is obviously not going to solve things. It's actually counter solving the situation. It's actually unhelpful, and it actually makes me angry. It makes me angry that there are people who think, and I'm talking about the governor of the most populous state in America, you know, Gavin Newsom. I'm talking about the member, I think it was a member of Congress who shouted out that, or tweeted out, I should say, that, you know, Ted Cruz is personally responsible for this. People just find someone they don't like, say, you are responsible for this. Anyone who does that is unhelpful and standing in the way of preventing these kinds of atrocities from happening going forward. That is a bad faith political smear. We all know it. And I think that part of this, Clay, gets that has gotten worse. That has become now a more universal impulse from the left. Something horrible happens. It's the fault of the people that I disagree with in politics.
That's what social media has created, I think, to a large extent, is social media is driven by emotion. and people respond emotionally and understandably when immediate incidents like these occur. My natural reaction is, again, as a parent, I think this is awful. I cannot imagine, like any parents out there, anything worse than having a kid that was at a school where something like this occurred. I really can't. And having to wait there all day and find out whether your kids are going to be safe or whether they're not. And when you're told that something, that they're not, that they may have been murdered, I cannot even imagine that feeling. It is devastating to even comprehend. But I step back eventually from the immediate emotion, and I want to know, how do we stop this from happening? And that's the kind of conversation. First of all, Buck, to my knowledge, you tell me if I'm wrong, I don't remember. I was in college when Columbine happened. I know we have a huge audience of people listening right now in Denver. And those two shooters at Columbine in the late 90s, if I remember correctly, seem to have inaugurated in many ways the concept of school shootings, at least in the way that they, the mass school shooter phenomenon. And so much of this has grown out of the mythologizing and the infamy that we foist upon these mass shooters. And so what often happens is you have a cluster. I don't think it's a surprise that Buffalo happened and then this happens. People with mental illness respond to the actions of other people with mental illnesses who they in some way find to be heroic, which is why I would say one thing, and I think we're trying to do it on this show, but I think larger media, because so many people listen to this, we've got to stop making the people who do this heroes. And the data is pretty clear that the number one thing that media and you guys
you mean
with social
make them
media
fa-
can
make
do,
them famous, you're saying.
Don't make them famous. Don't share their names. Don't, I mean, you can, you know, the impact of what they have done, I would share the names of the victims. I would share the names of the heroes, like this gentleman who we still don't know from Border Patrol, who evidently stormed the school and went in to protect people, ran into danger. All of those people deserve to have their stories told, but we should not continue to provide fame to the people who are seeking it. That's one, it psychologically seems to be one of the driving forces behind why these happen. And then the second part, Buck, is I want to know how it happened, because I want to try to prevent it from happening again in terms of the actual school. How did he get into that school, as you were talking about when you analyze this and go back through it? Because I look at it through what my schools and my kids have in place, and I hope that's sufficient. But I think every school should have that as well as an armed security guard, in my personal opinion.
I also think that there is a tendency in the aftermath of a shooting like this to we look at this and actually forget about some of what has happened before historically. And there needs to be a look at the data, the numbers, because what I'm saying is people will say this never happens anywhere else. And then you find out, no, actually, this does happen it has happened in other countries around the world. We have more mass shootings than other industrialized countries. There's no question about that. But these incidents have happened elsewhere. People will say, we've never faced anything. Do we have monsters today in society that we never had before? That's also not true. Now, we could look at numbers, we can look at trends, but the worst ever school massacre was actually in Michigan in 1927. It didn't involve a gun, it involved a bomb. And you had, I think it was almost 40 people, I think it was 38 people, mostly, almost entirely children, blown up in a school building then. You mentioned Columbine. Columbine was 1999. Does that sound?
I think that's right. I think it was late 90s. I know I was in college.
I was in high school at the time. I remember. But Columbine actually came after the Dunblane massacre in Scotland of 1996, where somebody went into a school and just shot as many children, students as possible. So there are monsters among us, and there have been, unfortunately, for all of modern history and all of history, depending on where you're talking about and what the circumstances are of the kind of murders you're looking at specifically. So now it's what does the data tell us about how to bring down the probabilities, the percentages of something like this happening? And I know that can feel in this very emotional moment, you think, well, we'll do anything. No, we should do what is smart, what would work, what is worthwhile. And it's not easy. There's a whole other component. We can come back and talk about it, Clay. They say, oh, don't talk about the mental health issue here. It's about guns. This is what you're hearing right now. It's this time, you'll notice, the narrative is very different. We're not hearing about white nationalism because white shooter is was Latino. So we're not hearing about white nationalism as the motive behind this one. So it's all about guns. When you read about this individual, Ramos, who, I'm sorry, I said his name, but you know, his name is out there.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's commonplace because his name is so widely spread, which is why I think one of the things to do is to start that trend of the, this is what the number one thing to do is not make him famous. But yes,
when you read his background in terms of what people thought of him, and he sounds like he was right there with the trench coat mafia and Colin. I mean, he's just the same warning signs, the same patterns, the same, and the same thing with the Buffalo shooter, by the way, in terms of people knew. Okay, well, if we know someone seems to be borderline or maybe even fully beyond violent psychopathy, what can we do about that as a society? And there's a whole discussion that I think a lot of people, particularly people on the left, I'm just going to say, don't want to have about where are involuntary commitment laws? What are we willing to do? So that's, I think, a component of this as well. And I also want to say, Clay, Clay and I will talk to you about the results yesterday from politics. We've got some other stories we're going to talk about today as well, because you know, we need to make sure that we update everybody on everything that's going on. Because I know this is a hard one. I mean, this makes people, the whole country feel sad right now. And so we need to know what happened and we need to confront it at some level. But we also need to do whatever we can to move forward and try to heal as a country. Tunnel to Towers Foundation is working on their most ambitious project yet. They're building a community of more than 110 homes on a large parcel of land that was provided by a generous donor. With your help and generosity, they're now building homes in what they call their Do Good Village. It's located in Land O'Lakes, Florida, just north of Tampa. It's the first of its kind for the foundation's program recipients. This is for families who have lost a loved one in our war on terror or in the line of duty as a first responder. It's a special place where families know their neighbors understand and care. It's a community where the children of our nation's fallen or severely injured heroes can grow and experience life together. The foundation's Do Good Village is going to help these families beyond measure. Help America's heroes and their families heal together. Make the Do Good Village the first of many communities just like it. With every mortgage-free home, the foundation makes good on its promise to do good and never forget the sacrifices our heroes have made for our country and our communities. Join us in donating $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
If you are an accredited investor, U.S. oil and gas should be part of your investment portfolio. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Beyond the possibility to invest in a sector that historically delivers sound returns, when you invest with Labrador Energy, you have access to potential tax benefits, and you may be able to structure your investment to offset active or passive income. According to many sources, U.S. oil and gas drilling remains one of the best tax-advantaged income investments available. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Labrador's core executive team has more than 190 years of combined oil and gas experience and has drilled thousands of oil and gas wells. They're dedicated to mitigating risk while providing accredited investors with sound returns. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. American energy independence is crucial for our national security and future prosperity, and Labrador Energy is leading the charge to make that a reality. Invest in U.S. oil and gas today. Learn more at LabradorEnergy.com.
Offer for accredited investors only. Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult your legal, tax, and financial advisors and read the prospectus before making any investment decisions. Visit LabradorEnergy.com for the prospectus and more information.
Nowadays, $20 barely gets you a burger and fries or maybe a quarter tank of gas. You know what it will get you, though? For $20 a month, you can get unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data from my cell phone company, Pure Talk.
You'll get the same quality of service as AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, but for half the cost. The average size family saves almost $1,000 a year, all with no contracts and no activation fees. You can keep your cell phone number and your phone or get great deals on the latest iPhones and Androids.
Make the switch today and save an additional 50% off your first month. Choose a wireless company who shares our values, who supports our military and veterans, creates American jobs, and refuses to advertise on fake news networks.
Go to puretalk.com/clay to switch today so you can actually afford that burger and fries. That's puretalk.com/clay. The number one fantasy sports app in America is Prize Picks. It's the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. 5 million members already active on Prize Picks. If you've not yet downloaded Prize Picks, do it today. Unlike other apps, on Prize Picks, it's just you against the number. It's about the players and not the teams. You look for the sports you know best and that you follow the most. Then you make a single decision on each player projection, more or less. Every time you play, you pick 2 to 6 players and make that one decision. You can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 picks. More player action on Prize Picks now than ever, and it's the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states now. Prize Picks also gives you injury insurance so your picks stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. Download the free Prize Picks app and open your account. Use my name, Clay, for a first deposit match up to $100. Download the Prize Picks app. Use promo code Clay, that's C-L-A-Y, to get set up and get a deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Welcome back to Clay and Buck. We've told you we're going to dig deep, go to the bottom, the origins of the Russia collusion lie. We're not going to let it just go away because the left doesn't want to talk about it anymore after 3 years of obsessing over it. And we've got the Sussman trial underway right now. Our friend Andy McCarthy joins. He's at National Review, a Fox News contributor, spent over 20 years as an assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. Andy, great to have you back.
Hey, guys, how are you? Good to be with you.
Good, Andy. So what is the biggest revelation, takeaway for you so far in the Sussman trial? Obviously, the Robbie Mook testimony about Hillary giving the order when it comes to the Russia collusion investigation and pushing that forward to the FBI seems like a big deal. But what are your biggest takeaways?
Well, my biggest concern going into the trial, Buck, was that Durham has really planted his flag here on something I think that is a dubious proposition. In federal law, if it was a crime to make a false statement, he'd be fine. The problem is the crime is making a false statement to the FBI. And Durham has basically, his theory of his case is that the FBI was duped here. And I think those of us who watched this closely for a long time think it's more complicated than that, to say the least. And I was afraid that the FBI would give Sussman a lot of its, his defense in this case. And I think that has turned out to be true. So while it should be a slam dunk case because the lie that's charged is that he claimed he wasn't representing anyone when in fact he was representing the Clinton campaign, that seems to be clear. And you have to prove materiality. It should be easy to prove materiality because obviously the reason he lied was because if he had said, I'm here from the Clinton campaign bringing you some opposition research about the opposition candidate who we're running against in 6 weeks, you know, they would have looked at the information very differently. The whole reason for the lie is obvious. So they should be able to prove this. The problem is it's come out in the last couple of days that, you know, the FBI claimed in their paperwork opening the case that the information hadn't come from Sussman, but it came from the Justice Department, which is not true. So if you're prosecuting a false statements to the FBI and the FBI itself has made a false statement in its investigation opening document, that's not a great way to kick it off. And it just seems to me that the reason that they concealed his identity, that is Sussman's identity, you know, they say they wanted to treat him like a confidential informant. There was no reason to treat him like a confidential informant. He wasn't under any threat. They treated him like a confidential informant, which allowed them to conceal his identity from the agents who were doing the investigation because they knew they were taking explosive political information from a political source and they didn't want to get caught doing it. So they knew they were playing with fire, and it just goes to show that, you know, the FBI's position here is not the usual position we expect to find the FBI in.
Okay, Andy, he gets convicted, he doesn't get convicted. What does it mean going forward? Because at a minimum, we now have an under oath testimony from Hillary Clinton's campaign manager that she was directly involved, at least in knowledge, about the fact that they were sharing this information. If he is found not guilty, if he is found guilty, what does it mean going forward in your mind as to this overall and overarching investigation?
You know, the thing is, Clay, I think you're asking me what's sensible as a legal question, and it makes perfect sense. But I think the question is really more political than legal. It, just in a very blunt bottom line sense, I think if Sussman gets acquitted, the media is just going to kill Durham's investigation. And we may be able to analyze it logically and legally and say, you know, look, the evidence here showed that Sussman lied, and it showed even more that the FBI was acting in a very curious way throughout this investigation and clearly was in the tank to this whole idea that Trump was in a corrupt relationship with Russia, which guided a lot of its activity, not just in this case, but also in the broader investigation. So, I think we can look at this and still take things away from it that are very valuable in terms of the historical record. But in terms of the impact of Durham's investigation, which, you know, by the way, it's not exactly capturing the imagination of the country, right? I mean, it's not like people are paying rapt attention to this. But I think that the media is just going to, if Sussman walks, then the media is just going to say, you know, Durham has wasted everyone's time for 3 years.
I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? After Mueller really wasted everybody's time for as long as he did, the narrative could turn into, well, Durham, wait, you know, it's just stunning. And we're speaking to Andy McCarthy here, everybody, National Review, Fox News, former assistant U.S. attorney for, Andy, what, 23 years? Is that right? You were there a while.
About 20. Close.
About 20, okay. So, Andy, on the Durham report, there's supposed to be a report, right? Isn't that how this is eventually going to be finished up? Is that something that you expect is going to come out this year? Do we have any? Basically, is this going to amount to anything? You know, because a lot of people were promised a lot of things for a long time about getting everything we said about Russia collusion. It was a Hillary plot. The FBI went with it, fell for it, whatever. The deep state pushed it. The media amplified it and were colluding in it. Does the Durham thing go anywhere? Because it sounds to me like you're worried. Not really.
Well, I think you get a final report at the end, whether that'll be this year or not. I hope it's this year, but, you know, Durham's made some sounds the last 3 weeks like he's not done yet, that there may be more charges. Now, maybe there will be, maybe there won't be, but what I would caution people who get all excited whenever he says such things is twofold. Number one, the statute of limitations for most federal crimes is 5 years. And most of what went on here happened in 2016, 2017. So, you know, time's a wasting if you're going to indict something within the statute of limitations. And then the second thing, I'm going to sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but I'm going to repeat what I said at the beginning. If you want the big fraud on the government case here, the only way you make that is if the FBI is in on it. And Durham's theory seems to be that the FBI was duped, which is proving to be a big problem for him, I think, in the Sussman case as it is. So I wouldn't expect a big indictment on a theory that the government agencies were defrauded here by the Clinton campaign. But he is supposed to write a narrative report. I think that the reason that Bill Barr made him a special counsel rather than just an ordinary prosecutor is that ordinary prosecutors, like when I was at the Southern District of New York, If I didn't have enough evidence to make a case, I closed the file and moved on to the next case. Special counsel have to write a final report. It's supposed to be a confidential report that you write to the attorney general summarizing the investigation and explaining your charging decisions. Customarily, most of these have become public. like the Mueller investigation did it's substantially public. There's a lot of stuff you have to withhold, like grand jury information or classified information. But for the most part, you get the story. The thing is, I don't know, guys, if the media is going to agitate for the Durham report the same way they agitated for the Mueller report, particularly if there's acquittals along the way. I mean, I just wonder how hard people are going to fight over it.
Andy, sitting here as a lawyer, I always like to analyze what is the jury potentially going to look like? What might their preconceptions be? What might their internal biases be? This is obviously a huge part of any jury selection. And of all places to have a trial, forum shopping wise for Hillary Clinton, you may be able to name a better one. I can't really think of one better than Washington, D.C., which is an overwhelmingly Democrat city. In addition to the challenges you're mentioning that Sussman's conviction may entail, purposed for Durham, how would you analyze the people who are making the decision here, and how much does that factor in terms of guilt or innocence?
Yeah, I think you're really hitting on the main thing. You know, I've said a number of times that Durham may represent the government, but this is not a home game for the government, this trial. And I think it's even worse in some ways because the judge has a lot of ties to Clinton world. He's an Obama appointee. Just so people understand what I mean when I say he's got ties to Clinton world. When he got out of law school, he clerked for a pretty famous judge on the D.C. Circuit named Abner Mikva. And the year his clerkship ended, Mikva went to the Clinton White House to become the White House counsel to Bill Clinton. And Cooper, the judge, went to the Justice Department to work for Amy Gorelick, who was the deputy attorney general in the Justice Department. So his Clinton ties go back a long way. And there are a lot of suggestions that he shouldn't be sitting on this case because he might be too conflicted. He doesn't think he was. And I think his looseness in terms of analyzing conflicts of interest spread over into the picking of the jury. So he seemed to think that as long as he told the jurors that Donald Trump is not on trial here and Hillary Clinton is not on trial, that somehow talismanically, magically removed the political overtones from the case, which, of course, it doesn't. If it wasn't for Clinton and Trump, there wouldn't be any case. But nevertheless, because that was his approach, we have people on the jury who basically said during the selection process that they contribute to Democrats, that they supported Clinton, that they oppose Trump. And we have one juror who disclosed in the middle of the trial, and I think she did this in good faith. I don't mean to suggest otherwise, but she came in one day and she said, oh, I just found out that my daughter is on the same sports school team as Sussman's daughter. I think they're on a crew team together.
D.C. is a small town, by the way, for people out there who are like, that's crazy. Yeah. It's really not a big population.
Nope.
Andy, before I let you go, could I just ask you, obviously the biggest thing on everyone's minds across the country right now is this horrific shooting that occurred in Uvalde. You were a federal prosecutor, as we said, for over 20 years. You put away mob hitmen, terrorists. You prosecuted the first World Trade Center bombing bombers. Is there anything that you think, you know, from a legal perspective, either in the toolkit of the legislature or as just prosecutors, from a legal perspective, is there something that could be done to try to stop these kinds of mass murdering psychopaths before they can engage in them? I just wanted to pose that to you. I mean, you're a true expert. You're a guy who's really been there and been on the front lines, stared down evil. What could we do?
Well, Buck, you know, no constitutional right is absolute, right? Any right, even liberty, can be removed as long as you accord due process of law, right? You have to prove things beyond a reasonable doubt to remove someone's liberty. So in my own mind, I could concoct like a red flag type system that would have enough due process rights that we could have confidence in it, that you might be able to remove guns from people if you could make a showing that they were, you know, mentally disturbed in some way, or you know, we could hash out the grounds for it. The problem is, I don't think, even if I could come up with something perfect legally, I don't think the Democrats can be trusted politically not to use these processes punitively, because every place we turn, they're using, like, they're weaponizing the Justice Department. So if you're a numbskull and you're wandering around the Capitol, you're not doing anything violent, but you're in a place where you shouldn't be, they'll haul you back 2,000 miles from New Mexico and make you stand in a misdemeanor trial. But if you're camped outside a Supreme Court justice's lawn, you know, on their property, protesting for abortion rights, they said, well, as long as they're being peaceful, it doesn't make any difference. So they're so political, the way that they use the processes that we give them, I have a hard time in good conscience saying, well, why don't we come up with a new legal system that can be used to remove guns from people, when I don't have confidence it'll just be used in good faith.
Clay and I totally agree, by the way. We're just nodding our heads.
I mean, that is so well said, I think. Indeed. Andy McCarthy, we appreciate it. We know how busy you are. That's been a fantastic analysis of all this.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great week.
We will, for sure. Look, a lot of people out there getting dressed for events. Maybe you got graduations coming up. Maybe you got a variety of different events where you know you need to get dressed up, but you also still want to be comfortable. How do you find something that balances both? Well, we got it for you. It's the Wolf and Shepherd shoe. The mission is simple. Equip professionals with footwear they feel comfortable in all day. When that happens, everything else falls into place. Their founder is a former track athlete and designer who bought athletic shoe innovation to dress shoes. He brought this right to the combo, and their most popular style is called the crossover. That's because it's a business meets athletic shoe that features full grain Italian leathers and an athletic sole. Feels like you're wearing athletic shoes, looks like you're wearing a dress shoe. You get all day comfort and style and likely some compliments as well. Buck's got a closet full of these. I got to tell you, I'm wearing this crossover right now, getting tons of compliments. It's a fantastic shoe. A lot of you out there listening to us, Father's Day's coming up, and you're trying to figure out, maybe you don't like dad's shoes, maybe you don't like grandpa's shoes. How about hooking them up with a brand new Wolf and Shepherd shoe? They are phenomenal, and you can make them a part of your wardrobe right now. Better footwear for the workday. Join the pack at wolfandshepherd.com. Go online, wolfandshepherd.com. No promo code needed. That's wolfandshepherd.com, spelled S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D, wolfandshepherd.com.
Shame on the Democrats who pushed the big lie that a grand scheme was afoot to prevent millions of Americans from voting. It was never true. It was just to push their pre-existing policy agenda. The fake hysteria was just a pretext to push a sweeping national takeover of election laws that Democrats had already had on the shelf for a number of years. Now, the rhetoric is proving false right before our eyes. These common sense Republican laws appear to be achieving just what the American people want. The American people want to make it easier to vote and harder to cheat. This whole episode proves exactly why our democracy still needs its cooling saucer.
Even Mitch McConnell gets it when it comes to Georgia, friends, because the numbers are speaking loud and clear on this one. Record turnout in the primary in Georgia yesterday. As we know, we had, by the way, Clay is back with us. So look at this. I thought you threw the smoke bomb. You're back already. You know, you're
the kids got let out of school, Buck, early. It's the final day of school for my kids. And the moment I got there, they were already coming out, hopped in the car. It took me like 4 minutes to pick them up, unprecedented speed. So yes, I'm back. Kids are, if you hear kids screaming, in the Travis household, they're probably screams of joy because school is officially out in their department. And for the next couple of months, they're going to be playing a lot of video games. Let's be honest here.
So here's where we are in Georgia. Just so put us all on the same page here. Who won? Who lost? And what happens now? And what does this tell us about the future and the midterm election specifically? So Kemp won, the sitting governor, defeated a primary challenge and won by a lot. I think it was like a 70, give or take 70-20 situation. Herschel Walker cruised to, high stepping into the end zone,
yes,
if you will.
Yes, good analogy.
Thank
yes.
you. See, I I learned
he
the
stiff arm the competition.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
So Herschel Walker is clearly going to be the GOP nominee up against Raphael Warnock. That is going to be a Senate throwdown. I'm looking forward to seeing how that one shakes out. I think Herschel's going to. Obviously, I'm hoping Herschel wins that one. Do you have a particular take on already?
Yeah, no, I mean, I do think he's going to win. But, Buck, you can gamble on politics. You know I like to gamble on sports. But you can gamble on politics outside of the United States. It's not technically legal in the United States. But Herschel is minus 275, which is a pretty substantial favorite to beat Warnock. Kemp is minus 400 to beat Stacey Abrams. That means you'd have to bet... $400 to win $100. He's a prohibitive favorite on both sides there. I just think that's interesting for people who are actually putting their money down on what they anticipate happening in Georgia.
By the way, you know, Clay, I mentioned this before. I just wanted to give the stats again. This is from our friend Ryan Gerdusky. He's a political analyst and a friend of the show. He put this out. Georgia GOP primary turnout, 2006, 419,000. 2010, 680,000. 2014, 596,000. 2018, 608,000. 2022, 1.1 million. All right.
Yeah.
So people are fired up in Georgia. GOP voters are fired up in Georgia. Raffensperger won, the Secretary of State, and he is somebody people know probably mostly because of, at the national level, I should say, outside the state of Georgia, because he had some, a little bit of kerfuffle. With Trump, it was a little bit of a back and forth with Trump over the situation in Georgia, the election results, etc. So Raffensperger did win. They have an open primary in Georgia, so there was some percentage of formerly registered Democrats who voted for Raffensperger. It was pretty substantial from what I saw. I think it was 7% of his vote came from formerly registered Democrats, for whatever that means. Am I missing any big ones in Georgia? So we got the secretary. There was, of course, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yes.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, she won her primary. They tried to keep her off. We had her on the show to talk about the lawsuit
ridiculous
effort to stop her, which was absurd and all that. But, Clay, here's my biggest takeaway from just last night. I want to hear what yours is. We haven't, Clay and I haven't even been able to chat about this one because we've been talking about the other things going on. I think that this is an indicator of people are really unhappy with Biden. And Republicans are, I think they're the most fired up in my adult lifetime to cast votes in favor of candidates who will stand with freedom, the Constitution, and against the insanity. I think that's, it's not a done deal yet. I think that's what Georgia is showing us right now.
I think it's well said. And by the way, total primary turnout up 63% over 2018. It almost passed the 2020 primaries, which were obviously a presidential election year when everybody was super fired up to get their votes in to pick a Democrat nominee back in 2020. So we've got at OutKick, Buck, official request for comment into Major League Baseball because they tried to brand this as Jim Crow 2.0. I think Major League Baseball should have to apologize to the state of Georgia. I think there are a lot of corporations. Certainly Joe Biden's not going to do it, but we're going to hold them accountable at OutKick because I'm still outraged over the decision to pull the All-Star game out of Atlanta based on a lie, what is we now know a lie. I had two big takeaways from this. Buck, to your point, Stacey Abrams and Joe Biden are a bigger story now than Donald Trump is. So if you look at the results with Brian Kemp and you look at the results in that race where he won by 70 to 20%, something like that, people in Georgia overwhelmingly are saying we want Stacey Abrams beaten and we think Brian Kemp has the best option to do it. So this is now a referendum. The midterms, as they should be, are not a referendum on 2020. They are a referendum on what's going on with Joe Biden and Stacey Abrams as a candidate. Second takeaway, Buck. I think Donald Trump has to be very careful in understanding that if he is going to run in 2024, it has to be a forward-looking campaign from his perspective, not a backwards one. Let me explain what I mean by that. The voters are telling us quite clearly that they are unhappy with Joe Biden. If Donald Trump is running in 2024, the only backwards look he needs to be giving is towards Joe Biden and talking about what a bad job he's going to do. I'll use a sports analogy. You can't relitigate 2020 as a part of the 2024 campaign. You, especially if you get to run against Joe Biden again, can argue that people made the wrong choice and here's why they need to pick you going forward. My concern is Trump is going to try to drag everybody back into 2020. We don't need to relitigate 2020. I think the Republicans got screwed. I think Donald Trump got screwed. I think Democrats used COVID to rig the election. I think big tech rigged the election. I think all that happened. But I'll use the sports analogy here, Buck, because Georgia is a big sports state, and they're coming off a Braves championship and a Georgia Bulldogs championship. Sometimes you lose a game because there's a bad call made or because the rules are designed incorrectly. You can't continue to talk about the game that you've lost. You have to talk about find a way to win going forward. And to me, what Georgia voters were saying is we're way more concerned about the future now than we are about relitigating the past. And I think if Trump is smart, he will take a lesson from this and start to focus on the things that he would bring if he runs in 2024 for the 4 years more he'd be president, instead of arguing about 2020. That's my big takeaway.
I would add just two things to it. One is the mentality should be we have to win by so much that their cheating doesn't matter.
Yes.
I want to hear, yes, if Trump is running again, I think he is, or whatever the case may be, I want to hear the president saying, we're going to win by so much that the cheating isn't going to matter, comma, also, we're going to do everything we can before the votes are cast to make sure, to your point, that they aren't pulling nonsense and shenanigans, which is what they did during the COVID year. I mean, Pennsylvania is a perfect example of this. Pennsylvania state constitution explicitly did not allow some of the voting changes, yes, that were made to expand. I mean, it's as clear as day. And what I was having to say to people at the time after that election, after the 2020 election, was, guys, I hear you. You're right. We're right. There's a problem in Pennsylvania with this. No judge is going to say, well, that shouldn't have been the rules that people voted under. Therefore, I'm going to throw out these votes. Now, that can make people very angry, and I get it. But that was the reality. No judge was going to say, well, the 100,000 votes or the 50,000 votes or whatever it is that came in later than what would have been allowed with the rule change. And we got, basically, Trump campaign got caught flat-footed on the preemptive action against the way the Democrats want to cheat. Because, look, my attitude is they always cheat. It's a question of how much.
I think you're 100% right, Buck. We got to win Wisconsin. We got to win Pennsylvania. We got to win Michigan, Minnesota, Georgia, New Mexico, I think, is in play.
Look at you with Minnesota and New Mexico.
I think Nevada is going to be in play, if I can ever learn how to pronounce the state name correctly.
Nevada. So
the people in the state are happy. And I think Arizona, certainly, Georgia, all of those states, right? I don't want to win by a pinprick. And let's be honest, Trump won in 2016. By a small margin, right? You change 100,000 votes, Hillary's elected. You change, 40,000 votes, yeah, in 2020. We flip the election both ways. Trump, or whoever the nominee is in 2024, because I think there's going to be a robust primary debate about who the best Republican standard bearer is. It needs to be a campaign that's not trying to win in the margins. It needs to be a campaign that kicks ass.
I think you could have, with the right GOP candidate, because you and I both know there's not going to be some great turnaround effort from this Biden administration. Even they know it's a disaster. This is, this is a mess. It's going to go down in history as one of the least effective, worst presidencies in living memory, certainly, maybe going back, 100 years. And I think the GOP right now, a lot of things can change. Right now is on track to get more than half of the Latino vote.
Yeah.
And maybe double their share of the African-American vote, which would be fantastic.
I mean, it would destroy progress. The Democrat Party as it exists today if that happened.
So we'll have to see. We'll continue to push for this, folks. We'll talk to you more about it in a second. Few coffee companies make the kind of impact that Black Rifle Coffee has been able to over the years. Purely by word of mouth, when this coffee first became available, started to attract a long list of coffee connoisseurs, people that really care about their coffee, like me and Clay. We drink coffee every day, multiple times a day. To Black Rifle's credit, the taste of their coffee was rich and fresh, like the kind of coffee you'd expect to drink right out of the fields in Brazil or Colombia, for instance.
The story behind this coffee brand was started by a veteran, Evan Hafer, who has a lifelong passion for a great cup of coffee anywhere he happens to be. Even when he was in war zones, in fact, when Evan had a few minutes to himself, he improvised making in the field, out beyond the wire, the best coffee he possibly could. He was making it in his Humvee sometimes. Years later, Black Rifle is a publicly traded company making coffee for more Americans than ever before. They take their freshly roasted premium beans and ship them right to your home. You determine if you want them as whole beans or fresh grounds when they arrive. And if you want the Keurig cup style, they'll send you those too. Any way they arrive, you're going to love this coffee. Many of us also join the Black Rifle Coffee Club. That way, when we get the coffee we like delivered on the schedule we choose, we get a first look at what they're introducing next and get great discounts and special deals. Purchase right now at blackriflecoffee.com and use our names, Clay and Buck, as the promo code at checkout for 20% off your purchase. That's blackriflecoffee.com. Use the code Clay and Buck. You'll get 20% off your purchase. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
If you are an accredited investor, U.S. oil and gas should be part of your investment portfolio. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Beyond the possibility to invest in a sector that historically delivers sound returns, when you invest with Labrador Energy, you have access to potential tax benefits, and you may be able to structure your investment to offset active or passive income. According to many sources, U.S. oil and gas drilling remains one of the best tax-advantaged income investments available. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. Labrador's core executive team has more than 190 years of combined oil and gas experience and has drilled thousands of oil and gas wells. They're dedicated to mitigating risk while providing accredited investors with sound returns. Visit LabradorEnergy.com. American energy independence is crucial for our national security and future prosperity, and Labrador Energy is leading the charge to make that a reality. Invest in U.S. oil and gas today. Learn more at LabradorEnergy.com.
Offer for accredited investors only. Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult your legal, tax, and financial advisors and read the prospectus before making any investment decisions. Visit LabradorEnergy.com for the prospectus and more information.
Nowadays, $20 barely gets you a burger and fries or maybe a quarter tank of gas. You know what it will get you, though? For $20 a month, you can get unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data from my cell phone company, Pure Talk.
You'll get the same quality of service as AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, but for half the cost. The average size family saves almost $1,000 a year, all with no contracts and no activation fees. You can keep your cell phone number and your phone, or get great deals on the latest iPhones and Androids.
Make the switch today and save an additional 50% off your first month. Choose a wireless company who shares our values, who supports our military and veterans, creates American jobs, and refuses to advertise on fake news networks.
Go to puretalk.com/clay to switch today so you can actually afford that burger and fries. That's puretalk.com/clay.
Grand Canyon University, a private Christian university in beautiful Phoenix, Arizona, believes that we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. GCU believes in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose.
GCU equips you to serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community.
Change the world for good by putting others before yourself to glorify God. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's online, on-campus, and hybrid learning environments are designed to help you achieve your unique academic, personal, and professional goals.
With over 330 academic programs as of September 2023, GCU meets you where you are and provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Let it flourish. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We are joined now by Kellyanne Conway, has a new best-selling book out, Here's the Deal. Look forward to checking it out. Kellyanne, we'll talk about the book here in a sec, but I'm sure you have seen that Beto O'Rourke just confronted the governor of Texas. If you haven't seen, that just happened during a press conference as he was addressing the governor of Texas. The school shooting, the latest details, everything else. You're in communications. How in the world is Beto making the decision that he should storm a press conference giving us the latest details on a shooting that's less than 24 hours to make that story about himself. I mean, you're in comms. What's your reaction to a decision like that?
Clay and Buck, thanks for having me today. What a tragedy in Uvalde, Texas. Of course, we're praying for those lost angels. Beto O'Rourke is a complete clown, and he's everything that's wrong with our current political system and has been for the better part of a decade. Here's a guy who stood up today, knew the cameras were rolling, knew it was a live event, and must have forgotten what the content and the subject matter was, which is the governor and other officials, which doesn't include Beto O'Rourke since he lost the Senate and left the Congress, briefing people on the facts of what's happening. And they're very tough to hear. And instead, he goes and gets what all politicians want, fellas, earned media. Well, the way to get earned media is to not insinuate yourself into a factual press conference and the grief that so many families feel. And I'm very happy that the mayor of the town went after him. I'm very happy that that Mr. McLaughlin, the mayor, called him a, quote, sick son of a bitch to his face. He deserved that. But he also probably got what he wanted, which was his 15 seconds of fame. Oh, I really told them. He didn't tell them anything. That was a sugar high for him. And let me just quickly review with you Beto O'Rourke. Here's a guy who ran for Senate in 2019. He ran for Senate unsuccessfully in 18. He ran for President of the United States in 19. He's running for governor in 22. His kids are 15, 13, and 11. I guess he has his wife raising them because he's a professional politician and he's not even good at it. He's a recidivist political candidate. Second point. We all had to watch his root canal. We all had to see him on a skateboard, frying up a vegan burger, whatever he was doing. It was so disgusting, and guess who rejected it? Democratic voters. I write in my book that people like Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Beto O'Rourke, you know what they all have in common? They got zero electoral votes in the Democratic presidential primary in 2020. Beto O'Rourke and Kamala Harris actually dropped out in the fall of 2019, before the calendar even turned to 2020, with zero electoral votes, yet Vanity Fair put him on the cover. I call it the Vanity Project. Do you know the edition of Vanity Fair that featured Beto O'Rourke? I was born to run, born to do this. He got zero electoral votes from the Democrats. Why in the world should the rest of us get stuck with him? But I think he is doing exactly what I said yesterday on the Five to beg everyone not to do, which is to politicize this tragedy, but he can't help himself, and I think he is the worst example of it.
You know, Kellyanne, it's Buck, and he's not the only one who I think stepped out of line and politicized it. It came from the very top as well. You know, Biden last night in the speech, he had an opportunity to bring everybody together, but instead he called out the gun lobby and then said this.
I am sick and tired of it. We have to act. And don't tell me we can't have an impact on this carnage. I spent my career as a senator and a vice president working to pass common sense gun laws. We can and won't prevent every tragedy, but we know they work.
Can I just ask you, Kellyanne, why do they have to keep this common sense gun law talking point going? Why doesn't Biden or whomever just say what it is they think that needs to be done?
Oh, because then we would hold him to account. He's a guy with tremendous authority and no accountability. The public sees that, obviously. His poll numbers are all the way down around town. He had a tremendous opportunity to be healer-in-chief, to show what he had promised to do on Inauguration Day a year and a half ago, gentlemen, which is unify the country, be bipartisan. The most bipartisan his party has been in the last year and a half was getting Republican senators to impeach Donald Trump. That is the most bipartisan action they've done. I write about in my new book. Here's the deal. Let me tell you something about Joe Biden. The way he speaks, including last night about this tragedy in Uvalde, Texas, sounds like somebody who has not been in Washington, D.C., in positions of power, in elective office that we paid for 50 years. He sounds like a political outsider. He sounds like someone who comes to town and says, you know what? Everybody has failed in this town to get this done. I'm coming in as a political outsider. He is the Loch Ness Monster of the swamp. We all know that. And I think the only value that we would have in having, after back-to-back Obama and Trump as president, people are a little bit more political outsider, obviously. The only value we would have, he fails at completely, which is working across the aisle, building consensus, and at moments like last night, being non-political, trying to say, hey, this is why we passed this law or that law. But he sounds like someone who, by the way, he was the vice president when the tragedy at Sandy Hook in Newtown happened. I remember President Obama saying he was never so angry in his life. You know, he was brought to tears. But this guy sounds like somebody who hasn't been in a position of control. He's done absolutely nothing but talk for 50 years, and we paid for it, and we're paying the price today. I was very disappointed. I don't want anybody stepping on the bodies of these lost angels, these fallen angels, for political purposes, but people can't help themselves. Look how reactive the Democratic Party is right now. They have an old, angry white guy as the leader of the party. They have a vice president who can't put a sentence together, laughs at the most inopportune times. Please keep her far away from this tragedy, please. And so what do? They react to everything. There's a leak at the Supreme Court. Now abortion's the biggest issue going into the fall. There's a school shooting, God forbid, murdered. Babies murdered, single-digit ages murdered. And now he's gonna spend the rest of the however long doing this, he and the Democrats in the Senate. So it's very disappointing, but it's predictable. And I fear that for people like Joe Biden, politics comes first. It is his native tongue. It is his natural habitat. It's his comfortable place, and the country doesn't need it.
Kellyanne, the books, here's the deal. We had the results come out last night in Georgia, Alabama, and also in Arkansas, as well as the supplementary race in Texas. Big question for you here that shifts to the political arena. Do you think we're going to see a rematch? You know Donald Trump really well. You know Joe Biden based on the campaign that just happened. Do you think it's going to be Trump versus Biden in 2024, a little over 2 years from now?
It could be. And you have more and more voters saying that they wouldn't mind that for a very simple reason. They can compare the apples to oranges. You know, Buck and Clay, for years people would say, we're Americans. We're hopeful. We're optimistic. We'll always get better. Look at all the things we've overcome in this country. But now people are actually saying something a little bit differently. They're saying not that it will be better, but that it was better not that long ago. And they want to get back to that. And, of course, the rematch would be exactly that. I think Trump lost in large part. Biden became president in large part because he wasn't Trump. I think Trump can get in there and have the double messaging of, I'm not Biden. He's been a disaster. And, by the way, I'm the guy who delivered all of these wonderful accomplishments that you all enjoy that are gone now, that have been unraveled, not really through ideology, but through spite, energy independence, Putin not in Ukraine, Iran not salivating over Israel as a nuclear-capable country, trade deals that were recalibrated, manufacturing base, obviously inflation and immigration more in control, border security. People feel like life is increasingly insecure and unaffordable, rising crime in the States, drug overdoses. Everywhere we look, there's so much pain and hurt, and that pain and hurt will motivate an electorate to do something differently. So I am struck by pretty much all of the candidates, except one or two so far in these Republican primaries, where we've had record turnout, record enthusiasm across the board. They've all run as America First candidates. They're all running on the agenda, really, with the exception of Matt Dolan in Ohio, maybe one other. So they're all running on these attributes and these accomplishments that are limited government and free market. And I predict that, you know, President Trump, of course, would be the front runner if he runs, and lots of people won't run if he does. And then if he decides not to run, I think whoever it is needs to pick up that America First mantle and understand there are 74 million Americans who voted for Trump Pence in 2020, a record number by far for any sitting president. Where will they go? Who are they? And these Biden voters who did it out of convenience, they're already leaving him. Look at the polls. Don't tell me that people in the polls, independents, 18 to 39-year-olds, suburban women, who have really gone down, they've lost trust. They've lost confidence in the confidence of Joe Biden so quickly, so precipitously. Don't tell me that, no, they're going to go back to Biden because why? Because you want more of this? People can't wait. I think many people are actually looking past Biden already. You see the Democratic Party is. And it's really for his policy failings. They don't do anything well. Nothing we can see. The vice president herself has lost 13 senior staffers. Think about that. These are dream jobs to work for the first female president, first female vice president of color. She's turned it into a nightmare for many of these people. And I think the Democratic Party has big problems for all the talk and hand-wringing about the effect of President Trump's endorsements and is he the leader of the party. I think we're talking about the wrong party. Of course he's the leader of the party. Look at the Democratic Party. We've got Kurt Schrader in Oregon, endorsed by Joe Biden, gentlemen, loses miserably by double digits to a Bernie Sanders or AOC or Elizabeth Warren or all of the above endorsed candidate. And that's happening. John Fetterman in Pennsylvania, Democratic Senate nominee. Tim Ryan in Ohio, Democratic Senate nominee. They're basically telling Joe Biden, lose my number. Stacey Abrams never seems to be available in the state when Joe Biden comes to town. They're saying, please forget my name, lose my number. They don't want the president of the United States, the leader of their party, to campaign with them or for them. And that tells you all you need to know about the modern Democratic Party. It's cracking up. They're endorsing, and some of these radical socialists are winning. They're trying to push Henry Cuellar, the remaining pro-life Democrat legislator in Washington, D.C. I grew up in the Democratic Party. I had lots of Democrats in my family. The Democratic Party had plenty of pro-lifers, plenty of blue dog Democrats, boll weevil Democrats who talked about limited government and lower taxes and fewer regulations. Where are they now? You can't find a single pro-life Democrat in Washington, D.C. Henry Cuellar is the last one. They got rid of Dan Lipinski in Illinois a year ago because they are extremists on that issue and so many others. So I think you're witnessing a real crack up, a real identity crisis in the Democratic Party in terms of who they are, what ideology to hew closely to. And of 25 or so Democrats who ran in 2020, let's not forget that the party that says they're about the future and youth and energy, they ended up with an old white guy as their standard bearer, and people should not forget it.
Kelly Ann Conway, fantastic stuff. The book is Here's the Deal. It is a bestseller. Encourage you to go check it out. Appreciate the time.
Thank you for having me, gentlemen. All the best. Take care.
Will do indeed. You know, MyPillow has been hooking people up with a ton of different products over the years. Giza Dream Sheets, towel sets, the pillows, all of them fantastic. We have them all throughout the Travis household. But you know what my wife likes the most of all the products that have been made? How about my slippers? This has been an unbelievable success in my own house. My wife loves these slippers so much. She wears them everywhere. She bought them for all of her running partners. She's been giving them as gifts to everyone. She will tell you that they are the most comfortable shoes she's ever worn. You can wear them indoors. You can wear them outdoors. Go pick up the kids in them. Whatever you need to do, go run out to the grocery store or just hang out inside the house all day long, indoors and outdoors. She wears them, made from high-quality leather suede. You are going to love them, and your husband or wife is going to wear them. And for a limited time, you get a $90 savings on a pair of my slippers thanks to the blowout sale of the year that won't last long. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener specials, use the promo code Clay and Buck to receive this incredible limited time offer. I'm telling you, you are going to love the My Slippers. So will anyone that you give them as a gift. Slippers come with a 1-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee, zero risk. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the promo code Clay and Buck. You can also call 800-792-3269. That's MyPillow.com. Promo code Clay and Buck.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty. We're the Armstrong and Getty Show.
We cover the stories the mainstream media ignores.
The stories that are important to your life and important to the world.
The election, of course.
The many trials of Donald Trump.
Couple of wars.
Gender-bending madness.
Why are kids looking at so much social media?
And we bring you the stories the mainstream media is on.
But we do it without the left-wing media spin.
Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Open your free iHeart app and search the Armstrong and Getty Show to start listening.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.